Junk food is so catchy. I mean, Doritos, come on. Or Cheetos. Or more important yet, cheese balls, which my parents would not let in the house, but my grandfather Lou loved. When I was little, he and I would sit together on my grandparents' bed, watching tennis on TV, Bjorn Borg versus John McEnroe, and we'd be eating cheese balls. Light, salty, cheesy puffs of air. They crackle for an instant, then melt, like so much salty, fluorescent orange cotton candy on the tongue.
It was what kind of cheese? It was a red.
I think one of those really
good. Edam cheese.
An Edam cheese.
He brought it up to him and said, "Eat 'em."
Eat 'em, right. Eat 'em raw, organic, and boom.
Right.
But remember that the Philippines, I think the Philippines is probably the. That and Malaysia are the two most incredible places left on the earth where you have things like, for example, did you see the picture of the fetus that's supposed to talk? Didn't you have a picture of that?
I don't have a picture of the fetus itself.
But the talking fetus, and they had the Prime Minister of Malaysia, Mr. Suharto, and his wife were up there, and they'd been drawn into the whole ruse and everything. Can you imagine, you know?
It turned out to be a tape recording of Howard Hughes.
It did.
It was hidden under the woman's dress.
No, excuse me, but they played it. They had the speaker hidden in a cheese ball.
Oh, I think you've got your stories confused. Where did you read it? Did you read it in the Manangnang Weekly?
I read it in the Magadliham Kaitita.
Well, I read mine in the Mr. and Mrs. Comic Book.
Look, right here it says, Milawanang Napalanuko Lamang Ang Cheese Ball. Ginagawa CEO Nitong Boom.
Yeah, what a surprise. I see that. But I don't know. I think those stories have just gotten typographically mixed.
Well, if you guys had understood what I'd said, you'd realize that there's a Bagong Bagong production of this coming right up.
Oh, but Wang Wang Bluk Bak 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 Fly By Night producer, if you know what I mean.
That's
gonna
true.
Connect. Well, we had a friend, Don Johnson, who did a Philippine movie. Went over there. And no, did they shoot it here?
Yeah, well, they shot
Hollywood. They shot him there. And he had the whole film was about him running after a girl who had a duenna that went around with him, right?
What is a duenna? Is that like a fetus?
It's like a big cheese ball. It's a whole big cheese ball that rolls along with girls who are under 21 in Spanish-speaking countries.
To protect them.
I'm learning Spanish. Maya cheese ball.
A Mayan cheese ball.
Like machismo.
Yeah. That's what we're using in the war.
Cheese balls.
Right, man.
Several of the guys, you know, Hilario Gomez, you know him? He lives in Mixville, you know? And he is rolling these big cheese balls down Baxter Street. And it bounces, man. You get a good bounce on a cheese ball just before the freeway bounce, or over the freeway, you know?
Even a bad
and
bounce
into that
is
other
guy's
name,
man.
You know? What is that other guy?
The guy over there, you mean Sanchez. You mean
Sanchez.
Julio Sanchez.
Julio
Sanchez. Julio. I'm just learning the language.
That's all right.
They make fun of me, you know? But they don't when they find out that I got the cheese ball behind me, man.
You got a rocket in your pocket.
That's right, man. Any time of night, I can go up and get Hilario to roll another one down on them, man. I sometimes see a really fast car coming down the Glendale Freeway, man. I'll say, that guy, he's going too fast. I'm going to have to scare him. And so I get Hilario, who is always asleep and ready to be woken. And I say, let it go, Hilario. And he lets a big ball go, man, down Baxter. The rumble, you know.
Man, we were doing that the other night, you know. We were drinking Downer highballs.
That's right.
And we got into doing that, man. The drivers, the looks on their faces as they crash right into the freeway abutment, you know? Man, that's living.
You know how we make the downer highballs where I come from, man?
No, they did.
Ripple and asphalt, man. No. It's heavy.
So are the cheese balls, man. Because we put some asphalt in them so they don't sail. Because if a cheese ball can sail, man, I have a girlfriend who had a garage crushed by one of the cheese balls that went right, you know? Because of the winds over the freeway, when the smog comes pouring down the valley in the morning, the cheese balls sometimes can get caught in a crosswind, you know? It's terrible, man. My girlfriend shouldn't be terrorized by my own vandalism. That's not fair. So I've decided to get a job.
The very first Doritos were just salted tortilla chips. They bombed, basically. They didn't sell particularly well. And I think the packaging said toasted corn flavor, which is to say it tasted like what it was, which is toasted corn.
That's Canadian journalist Mark Schatzker. For years, I've been grumbling that there was something wrong with foods being made to taste like other foods, like Caesar salad flavored chicken and ranch-flavored rice crackers. But I couldn't tell whether or not I was just being a curmudgeon. Then, in 2015, the New York Times Book Review asked me to review Mark Schatzker's book, The Dorito Effect. And there it was, 259 pages calling what we thought was wrong with junk food a red herring. Because the real culprit? It's fake flavor. Foods being turned into flavors and applied to other foods. And that starts with the invention of the gas chromatograph. Around 1945, about 20 miles east of Innsbruck, Austria, a 45-year-old organic chemist named Dr. Erika Kramer enters a school science lab. She's there to meet a young doctoral student. A year earlier, Dr. Kramer had written and submitted a note to the scientific journal Naturwissenschaften. It described a theory for separating and analyzing chemical compounds in the mobile phase, like a gas. Kramer visualized each compound as a boat being carried downstream, each with a slightly different arrival time at the far shore. Her research was scheduled to be published in 1945, but then World War II ended. Austria was occupied by the Allies. The temporary equilibrium of war was disrupted. Dr. Kramer's paper wouldn't be published for another 30 years. Further complicating matters, in late 1944, an air raid destroyed Kramer's lab at the University of Innsbruck. Hence, she was coming to use the old lab at a high school. She wanted to conduct an experiment to test her hypothesis about separating compounds using gas. The basic idea was to use a carrier gas to move chemical compounds through a column, taking note of their differing rates of travel. And on that day, using an old Kipp hydrogen generator, a galvanometer, a resistance wire to build a thermal conductivity cell, and a few other bits and bobs, they built a machine to test the theory. It was the first gas chromatograph. More recent versions are used to monitor environmental pollutants, detect doping in athletes, determine time of death. In the annals of academic injustice, somewhere near the middle is the fact that Drs. Kramer and Pryor didn't get credit for their invention of the gas chromatograph. Instead, credit went to British scientists Anthony Trafford James and Archer John Porter Martin. Martin later won a Nobel Prize. Neither had read Kramer's work or even heard her name. I mention all that just to set the record straight. Much more important to our story is the next innovation, one that owes its existence to the gas chromatograph, one that has changed the course of human history.
They made the original hot?
The Dorito.
So if you put cheese in a jar, screw the lid on, wait for 10 minutes, and then open up the lid and smell it, that's what we're going to collect.
That's Dr. Jane Parker. Dr. Erika Kramer died 23 years ago, at the age of 96. So she's not around to explain how the gas chromatograph works. Dr. Jane Parker is. She teaches in the Department of Food and Nutritional Sciences at the University of Reading.
And I also manage the Flavor Center, which is the link between what we do in the flavor research group and the food industry.
Dr. Parker is walking me through how she analyzes the compounds in cheese. She puts cheese in a jar and screws on the lid. Then she inserts a needle-sized fiber into the air above the cheese. The fiber is imbued with aromas of cheese.
Then we can take that fiber out, and then we can go on to stage two. And stage two is where we separate out the compounds that have been absorbed onto the fiber.
They put the fiber into a machine.
Inside this instrument, we've got what we call a column, because in the old days they were columns. But these days, though, inside that machine, we've got a coil, which is 60 metres long. So as we push the aroma compounds along that coil, some of them go quickly, and some of them like to sit on the surface. It's a little bit like if you took a busload of families and you dropped them all at one end of a shopping street and offered to pick them up at the other end. Who's going to get there first?
Some compounds linger, some rush to the end. Each component arrives at a different time, like shoppers meandering through a mall.
Well, hi, Charles.
Hello, Larry.
It's 5 o'clock down here in Tierra del Fuego, and of course up there,
It's about 12 hours or 13 hours. We haven't decided yet, depending on where you are. But this is the fourth show we've done today. And, well, there's a lot of exciting news from the Tierra del Fuego 919th Southern Olympic Games. And I'll let Charlie Fuertes here from our local Ministry of Culture describe what we're going to do do next. Go right ahead now.
For those of you who have just tuned in, these are the Southern Hemisphere Olympics, the what we like to call the Winter Games here, but of course it is summer down here in Tierra del Fuego, and so the Winter Olympics are run under a different set of rules. We have already seen 4 days of intense competition. The speed mud skating yesterday, of course, was the highlight event. And the star watching event, the Olympic star watching, which is very popular down here.
Well, you know, Charles, excuse me, we're interrupting you.
That's perfectly all right. I have nothing more to say at this moment. I have to check with the fact man.
Well, now there you go. We're going to take you out now to the ladies uphill, men's downhill race.
Uphill here in Tierra del Fuego. For those of you who are watching on your TVs up there in the Northern Hemisphere, excuse me, Charles.
That's all right. You know, we have that's the beginning of the giant salami now. Yes, sir. That's number one. Number one is coming down. He has to go through these models here, you see. These models stand out here on the side of the hill.
Look out!
And got one there. That's really... I think that they're giving him a two, though, for that score. Yes?
Now look there. Look at there, Charles. Look at there. You see the man there on those specially constructed mud skis coming down the slalom
well,
now.
This is a little bit irregular, isn't it, Carlos? I mean, he has a motor on the back of those skis.
It's not irregular here for these Olympics, you know, because you have to have something to get any kind of momentum, you know. Sometimes if the unmotorated ski race yesterday, the average time was 8 hours just to go those 5 feet.
Well, the difficulty down here in Tierra del Fuego, you know, is the tremendous winds that blow at about 250 miles an hour, always west during the afternoon.
That's right.
So the speed skating, of course, records were broken when they were sailing with the wind.
Legs were broken, Charles.
That's very true, but of course when they sailed against the wind, it's taken 2 days now and they're still working on the 100-yard dash.
100-yard, if you can call that a dash.
To identify each of the flavor compounds, Dr. Parker smashes each aroma compound as it exits. It fragments and leaves behind a recognizable pattern. I'm simplifying this whole process somewhat, but that's the idea.
If you then decided it was a compound that you wanted to put into your cheese flavor, most of the time you can actually buy these compounds from a flavor house who will supply them to you.
Jane Parker is one of a small group of humans who actually knows what goes into making the flavor nacho cheese.
If I'm looking at the ingredients for the cheesy Doritos, I can see that they've got maltodextrin in there, so that will be your carrier.
She says to think of chemically building the matrix of compounds that make nacho cheese as a pyramid.
Land of the Pharaohs. Land of the Pharaohs. That sounds great.
All right, here we are in the land of the pharaohs.
Oh, no!
Well, we'll need to talk with the natives. Does anyone here know a little Egyptian?
Bill, come on, you're good at languages.
A little Egyptian, everybody knows I'm mad. Served my every need. Did a grand job on my ankles, too.
Now, hold it right there.
Glad to. Now, I think I'll hold it over here.
Oh, boy, it's nice out, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, I think you ought to leave it out.
Hey, look, fellas, fun's fun. Okay, but look, I gotta find a place to stay. It's gonna be night soon. I'm tired.
What's the matter with that dude?
I'm lost, and I want to go to bed.
Oh, my bony boy. In the Estonian mountains, we used to go to sleep leaning up against a windfall. I was but a mere prat then. I'll never forget the time a snake slithered into my wife. I wasn't but knee-high to a married grasshopper then.
No, look, that's all very interesting, but the
again.
Sun is going down.
Oh, no, you're all confused. The horizon is moving up.
Hey, listen, come on, you guys, help me, please.
I know. Let's stand him on his head.
Here you go.
Hey, push
back. Relax. Easy, boy.
Ah, you see? Now it's morning.
Oh,
he's no
all fun. He fell right over.
Hey, won't somebody please help me?
Easy, easy, my lad. At times of dexterity like this, my wee native compendium, Mohammed, used to pray to the divinities, his little brown froggy body a-quiver at my loins, chanting a stream of ancient Egyptian holograms.
What?
Diaphragm.
No.
I used to date.
Hieroglyphs, that's it. Do you remember any? Will they help? Anything
yes,
at all?
Of course. Let's see. It was a jackal-headed woman with her eyes akimbo. A king sitting sideways on his throne. A drip with gold, chipped nose uplifted. Nashri. All engraven on a pyramid of massy size, with the body of a lion, paws that refreshes, a tale told by an idiot, and the head of a fox.
The pyramid is opening.
Which one?
The one with the ever-widening hole in it.
I'm saved! I'm going in!
No, don't do that, son! It's dark and dirty in there!
Oh, but Mom!
It's full of bees and spiders! You might poke your eye out when your father comes home!
I'm going in, Mom!
Good evening, sir. Welcome to the only nice motel in town. How long will you be with us?
Just for tonight.
Ah, very well, sir. You'll find it's very clean here.
Maltodextrin is the carrier. It's flavorless, odorless, starchy. It's the bottom of the pyramid.
They've got sugar dextrose and corn syrup solids, so those will all be contributing a sweet taste to the flavoring. They've got salt, which is obvious. They've got citric acid, which will contribute at that sour note, so it might make the flavoring a little bit tangy. And then they've got three compounds which sound quite complicated. They're monosodium glutamate.
Ajinomoto. Ajinomoto. Ajinomoto, yes, from Mystic East. Come favorite chant of spiritual people. Ajinomoto. Ajinomoto. Yes, monosodium glutamate chant.
Ah, monosodium glutamate bean.
More sugar.
Make a smog taste like honey.
Ajinomoto. Dashinomoto.
Oh, honey. Boy.
Disodium inosinate and disodium guanylate. And those three together give you that umami taste, and they're very important in flavorings because they can also enhance the flavoring.
Now we get to the middle of the pyramid.
Things like spices, onion powder, garlic powder, bell pepper powder, tomato powder, and cheese powder. They're all natural, but as you can probably imagine, powders don't smell quite the same as the real thing. So at the top of that pyramid, you need to add in your top notes, which kind of restore the flavour that's been lost during the processing of the powders. These won't be listed on the ingredients. They'll be listed as flavour, and in the one I'm looking at, it says natural and artificial flavour.
I'm going to repeat what Dr. Jane Parker just said. All the natural flavours, like garlic and red pepper, they lose flavour in the process of being made into a powder that can go on a chip. So compounds are introduced to make those ingredients seem flavorful, when in fact they're not.
The top notes are incredibly important because it's your first impression of the snack. It's what you smell when you open the pack. It's what you sense when you first put the chips into your mouth. It's not listed on the ingredients. That top note flavor may contain 10, 12, maybe more, but a handful of key aroma chemicals that will convey that perception of the flavor of the Doritos to your nose.
There may be butanoic acid, which Jane says stinks of cheese and is produced from microorganisms, or it may be lactones. At the end of it all, you spray it on a chip and have the flavor we would now call Dorito. One morning in 1966, at Frito-Lay's Dallas, Texas headquarters, Archibald West, vice president of marketing, got some bad news. A fairly new product he'd named Doritos was bombing.
And they said, what are you going to do about Doritos?
That's Mark Schatzker again.
And he said, let's make them taste like taco. And they burst out laughing because they didn't think such a thing was possible. Because back then, you know, this is the mid-1960s, if you wanted to experience the flavor of taco, you had to eat a taco.
In the mid-1960s, there's no taco flavor. There's no nacho cheese flavor. Cool Ranch wasn't even a twinkle in Cool Ranch Senior's eye. That world is hard to imagine now. But not so long ago, if you wanted to taste cheese, you had to eat cheese. If you wanted to taste strawberry, you had to eat a strawberry. The technology to isolate the individual compounds that make our brains go cheese or taco or strawberry when we smell and taste certain compounds, that was somewhere between sci-fi and incredibly new. But it existed. The first commercial gas chromatograph hit the market in 1955, aimed at chemists. As far as the other Frito-Lay's executives knew, a potato chip could only taste like a potato chip.
I could have told them that there was acid in the potato chips, but I wouldn't have, and they wouldn't have known what acid meant. No. So it would have been a crazy moment. What do
they
you
would have thought you were a union goon.
Some union goon found you doing non-union love and threw acid on your potato chips.
Right. Look out for that scamp. He's got a bag of potato chips.
Okay,
lead-weighted Fritos.
Right.
A corn chip could only taste like a corn chip. But how wrong they were.
If you love great cheese flavor, it's time you tried the snack that's famous for it. Nacho cheese flavor Doritos brand tortilla chips.
How did Archibald West know you could turn taco into a flavor and then spray it on a corn chip? Dorito Effect author Mark Schatzker thinks that West may have found out about gas chromatography's potential for food from his friend Lawrence Frank, who invented Lowry's season salt. But that's just a guess. Archibald West may have read trade magazines or scientific journals. Wherever he learned it, West knew that using newly available technology, a taco could be turned into a flavor. In 1967, taco-flavored Doritos hit shelves and quickly disappeared into pantries nationwide. Taco-flavored Doritos were an unprecedented success. Frito-Lays didn't shutter the line. They expanded it. In 1972, they released nacho cheese Doritos. In 1986, Cool Ranch. They were all runaway successes. West had marshaled fake flavor to his cause. Archibald West had won at the expense of global health.
Tired of something different? Think you've eaten it all? Well, you're wrong again. Until you've tasted Real Food Brand reconstituted artificial food with just a hint of taste. Real Food Brand is so good, you can't tell it from the real thing. Packed in plastic to keep it clean, Real Food comes in three USDA-approved flavors. Spicy wool, imitation chicken fricassee, and desert-tested salt.
And in two convenient textures, bland, and for the youngsters, new now nitty-gritty bland. Buy some today. You'll never forget you did.
Have you ever wondered what flavor's for? Here's Mark Schatzker.
We tend to think that flavor is useless, that it's this quality that food has that gets in the way of nutrition. And yet when you look at the human genome, you know, the biggest chapter in the manual to make you is the chapter on making our flavor sensing apparatus, the nose and mouth. That's a bigger chapter than anything, bigger than the brain, bigger than the gonads. It's the biggest. So evolution must have thought that sensing flavor in food must be really, really important. So how could it be useless? How could it be killing us?
Mark is saying two things. First, that the largest chunk of the human genome, larger than the reproductive part, is devoted to flavor sensing. So that must be in some way valuable to our evolution. We're talking highly specific, finely tuned, incredibly accurate instruments. That's what we have. Dr. Jane Parker at the University of Reading says that during the identifying phase of flavor analysis, they often bring in a human nose. Because for many compounds, it's more sensitive than any machine. Remember, though it's impossible to test precisely, it's generally accepted that up to 95% of taste originates in the nose. The second thing Mark points out is flavor must be more meaningful than we think, or we wouldn't need the fancy gear. But his is not a common belief.
So many scientists disregard flavor. They think that the pleasurable aspects of food are kind of a negative thing that take us to a bad place, and what we really need to do is focus on the nutrients.
That sums up the conventional wisdom that guides our agricultural and nutritional policy. Flavor is hedonic frippery. Its endpoint is gluttony.
Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me particular pleasure at this time to bring to the microphone here in Los Angeles
four of the world's greatest authorities on ecstasy through gastromedy. From Punjabar, India, the gluttons.
Ah, my goodness. Thank you very much. Very much. Would you like some more of these pickled wine feet here?
Thank you very much. I will have some more of those loins of goose, please.
Loins of goose?
I'll have some more of those gross tails.
Could I have one of those gross tails?
Have a nibble of my
dressing.
Would you like some of this bosom of whale?
Bosom of whale, oh my goodness. Oh, goodness.
It has been spiced with a peppermint.
The gluttons, ladies and gentlemen, are a strange sect of Indian romantics and herbivorous eaters. We have with us today three leaders of the sect: Girish Chandra sect, Bobo the Whale Rinjinto sect, and Philip Punter. Punter. Yes, who is with us today too.
Oh, could I
it's
have
very
something
nice being with all you fellows.
We are now, going Mr. To, you know, to open a chain of restaurants here.
Yes.
That we are hoping to call the Stacko Waffles.
The Stacko Waffles, yes.
The Stacko Waffles.
Yes.
Pardon me, if you all wouldn't talk at once.
We are going to be passing out Stacko Waffles.
You're going to be passing out? You'll be passing out if you eat too many of them.
Don't make a joke at my expense.
I'm sorry.
It costs lots of rubles to make this place, and
yes,
we are hoping to push it across the bottom line, you know.
Do you just move from place to place when you run out of food?
No, we are not moving from place to place. We are going to build them in all places, so there will always be a place to sleep, you see.
That's right, a place to sleep and a place to eat and
yes,
a place to lie down and worry about things.
That's right. We are hoping
that's
that
true.
We are getting people very quickly to walk through the shop. We are hitting them with a sack of waffles. They are walking out, paying their money and eating in their cars. That way we got no space to put in with this.
Inside, of course, we are, you see.
We are
constantly inside this sack of waffles restaurant.
There is a fire in the studio.
My goodness.
Gracious goodness.
Well, this is incredible.
Quickly, get some weenies.
Folks.
If we could only
the sack of waffles has gone up in flames.
Well, I thought I should explain to you in the midst of
please?
This Holocaust that one
Bobby
of
the Whale
sack of waffles.
Sack of
we figured the Holocaust will only be about $20 billion.
Yes, that's not a bad cost for the whole thing.
Not at all.
Could
I have one with onions to go?
Here, take this one.
Oh!
You can have a sack of
Vanzetti.
Sack of Vanzetti. Pizza wattle.
Wattle. Yes. Actually, it's a wattle. It makes the house, they burn the people in.
The wattles, they come from the very best chickens that we
that's
can
right.
possibly get in.
Right. We only barbecue the chickens that we find wattling in the yard. The
that's
ones
right.
that walk and crawl, we don't
the ones
touch.
That are fat and
the
juicy.
Fat and juicy. The other ones are sacred. The lean, scringy ones are the sacred chickens.
Excuse me, could I have one of those lean, scringy ones?
Oh, do you want the sacred chicken?
Yes, I just got hungry.
You're going to, that is called the defilation of the
chicken. You're eating that very well, like a professional.
Which one of our native Indian dishes, the lean stingy. Oh, my goodness, yes, it's not much, but every inch is good to eat.
It counts, yes.
Yes, or my name isn't Hagop Kashishian.
But it isn't Hagop Kashishian.
I know, that's why this is so good.
Mark says, that's all wrong. There's the scientist in Florida, Harry Klee, who studied tomatoes. Mark says Klee was able to isolate and identify exactly what we love about them.
He looked at the flavor compounds in tomatoes, and he found there's about 26 of these compounds that really drive our liking.
There are 26 individual compounds in a tomato that the human flavor sensing instrument is attracted to. Here it gets super interesting. Professor Klee asked why. Sure, each of these compounds tastes good to us, but why did each of these flavors exist in the first place? In other words, Professor Klee asked, what is flavor for 26 times?
And what he found is that each one of those 26 flavor compounds is synthesized from an essential micronutrient, an omega-3, an amino acid, a carotenoid, which we turn into vitamin A. It's like the flavor of a tomato is a chemical sign telling your brain, there's good stuff inside me. You should eat me.
You guys are nothing but a pack of cards.
Drink me.
Drink me.
There must be some way out of this.
Harry Klee found that each of the 26 qualities that we like in tomatoes, like sweetness, a rose note, is a message. Each compound telegraphs the existence of an essential micronutrient. In this case, flavors were specifically communicating with a whole physiological organism via the flavor in a flavorful tomato. Now, you could conclude from this that flavors in the natural world are all sending messages. You could infer that our complex, genomically dense sensory organs are designed specifically to receive and interpret those messages, then provide feedback to our brains. You could surmise that instead of thinking of flavor as a clumsy form of flirtation, food's version of a bad pickup line, we should actually see it as an incredibly nuanced information exchange, as intricate and detailed as the finest spider web. But you would be making some pretty big assumptions.
Sweet tomato named Mary. The king, he is her father. She's in such a hurry that no one will bother. She could take a Martian lover.
Sort of right this ship and turn back time.
Yes, we can. The most depressing point in this book for me, as I said, I talked to you about how we've been breeding our livestock and our fruits and vegetables for output. The most depressing point in the book was this realization that there's this trade-off between quantity and quality, that essentially more delicious food is going to cost more money. And what I realized is that basically the rich get to eat great food, but what about everybody else? Because we do have to feed them. But it turns out that that's not the way it is. The reason we lost flavor isn't because there's a direct trade-off. It's not a zero-sum game that if you have a lot of tomatoes, they are always going to be bland. The reason we lost flavor is because we ignored it. We didn't breed tomatoes to be flavorful, so flavor just kind of got lost. But if you do breed for flavor in a tomato, you can get flavor and keep a pretty good crop. There was a tomato that's been developed by the University of Florida. It's non-GMO. This is just a tomato that was bred like tomatoes have always been bred. It has 85% the yield of a modern commercial, you know, powerhouse tomato. It's got great disease resistance, great shelf life, and the flavor is so good that the tasting panels at the University of Florida found it indistinguishable from the best tasting heirloom. This is a miracle tomato.
So why have we developed a taste for a highly processed diet?
Yep, perfect.
To the University of Florida's Linda Bartoshuk, the answer lies on the tip of our tongues.
Beautiful picture.
Taste buds play a crucial role in dietary choice.
The main thing we're born liking is sweet, because nature wants to be sure you survive, and to survive you have to have calories. And one of the clever things she came up with was pleasure. But the problem is, what about when you don't want to eat high fat, high sweet, high salty foods anymore? The trouble is, nature didn't equip us with anything to make us stop liking these things. I think if we could come up with even a couple examples of how we could pick completely different flavor combinations to produce this.
So Linda and horticulturalist Harry Klee came up with an intriguing idea. What if her research could help make healthier foods, like tomatoes, taste better?
We thought for years that the sweetness of the tomato was almost entirely due to the sugars. We know now that's not true.
The hidden secret: invisible gases called volatiles that waft through the air and give fruits and vegetables their aroma.
One of the volatiles in the tomato smells like sweaty socks, but it's very important to make the tomato taste sweet.
And I'll let you test the heirloom tomato.
That's wonderful.
Then we have the modern commercial tomato.
It's a supermarket tomato. It's not very good.
I don't buy tomatoes in the supermarket anymore because they taste like cardboard.
So why do supermarket tomatoes taste so, well, tasteless?
The grower in general is not paid for flavor. They're paid by how many pounds of red objects they grow and put in a box. And so there's been no incentive to have a great flavored tomato. See how firm it is?
Whoa.
It's hard as a rock.
Well, that's
the tomatoes are full of water to grow bigger and faster, leaving less time and space for nutrients and those all-important volatiles. So Harry and his team are trying to create their own tastier tomato, crossbreeding expensive heirloom varieties rich in volatiles with blander ones that grow quickly.
We've taken a great tasting heirloom, we hybridized that with a modern monster of a tomato that's got good productivity. We combine them and we try and get the best of both worlds. It took us 20 years to get to the bottom of it, but it just bugged me that you could have a product that people so much want to like and hate.
Harry has come up with his pride and joy, the Garden Gem.
Well, we think it's the perfect tomato.
Wow, that is delicious.
Others agree. A large grocery chain is interested in selling Garden Gems.
If we can make a tomato that really tastes the way a tomato is supposed to and get that to a supermarket at a reasonable cost, then people will make more intelligent decisions about their diets. They will buy a tomato instead of a Twinkie.
So what we need to do is get that flavorful ethic that you find in fine restaurants and farmers markets and get it in every supermarket. Will a supermarket tomato ever be as good as the best heirloom at the farmers market in late July at the height of the tomato season? It may not be that good, but what if it's just 80% as good? What if it's just a delicious tomato? What a boon that would be to everybody. And we can get these tomatoes on everybody's plate. And we can do that with everything we grow. The meat will probably be more expensive. A really good tomato will cost a bit more than a cardboard tomato. Meat, I think, will cost more, not outrageously more, but more. But the point I would make is that you eat less of it. Let's, instead of consuming too many calories, consume the right calories that are delicious calories.